The greatest superheroes come to the Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Terrific on Connecticut's number one Comic-Con returns. Meet actors from the Game of Thrones, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Stranger Things. Plus a special tribute to TV's Adam West, Batman. Artists from Marvel and DC Comics. The Batmobile, the Batboat, even the Batcopter. It's Terrific on Connecticut's Terrific Comic-Con. Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Tickets at the Mohegan Sun box office or Ticketmaster.com. See more at TerrificOn.com.
Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast fueled by the energy of fans just like you who can't get enough of comics, whether it's in your cereal or your pajamas or the books you pick up every week. I'm your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, promoter of the world's greatest Comic-Con happening every August in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun Convention Center. Join us this August 18th to the 20th and meet the men and women who created the characters you know and love. Now, joining me every week here on the Power Cosmic Podcast as a man of renown, the man who can find anything, and you can get it for yourself every week at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, the man who's written articles for the Jack Kirby Collector, Back Issue Magazine, and Alter Ego, Roy Thomas's personal manager, the one, the only, John Cimino.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Mickey.
Hello, John. Now, John, this is a very special episode of the Power Cosmic, almost like those after-school specials when we were a kid. They're meant to entertain, but meant to educate at the same time. Right, John?
That's what we do, Mitch. That's what we do.
Well, you and I were just in a heated conversation, and you said, put the mics on. We got to bring this to the people, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the two sides of the coin, the side that drives the industry that we know and love as comic books. I'm going to be taking the point as the wide-eyed, innocent, naive fan who doesn't want to believe, and you're going to take it as the cynical, realistic businessman who tells you how it is. Is that not correct, Johnny?
That is correct. And Mitch, I should point out also, like, we've been talking about this for already for the last hour. And this is what me and Mitch usually do. And hopefully this will be as good as what we just had about an hour ago, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It happened. It's like 7 in the morning. The phone call comes in. You're like, get up. Get out there. Let's do some stuff. And then obviously the conversations always turn towards the world of comic books. And we start off with trivia. We start off with, did you hear this? Did you hear that? And inevitably it ends up into an argument. Correct, John?
Well, all the time. That seems to be the RMO.
Now, we were talking about Marvel's latest attempts to restart their sales, if you want to call it that. And this fall, they're about to launch a special set of books that has the new versions of their characters that have been running around the books, the new Iron Man, the new Hulk, and everybody else. And they're going to meet the classic characters that we know and love, the Bruce Banner Hulk, the Steve Rogers Captain America, the Peter Parker Spider-Man, all that stuff, the Don Blake Thor or whoever. And what is that called, John? Legacy? Or
Generations?
Oh, Generations, that's what they're calling it?
Yeah, that's what that one shot or whatever it's called.
Now, at first when I heard the news, I thought they were going to relaunch all the books and just bring back all the old heroes that we grew up with in the 70s and the 80s and just call it a day. But you're telling me now that is not the case and it's just a one-issue storyline?
Well, let's go to the other side of the fence first. Well, you got to remember, this is all about marketing and making money. Now, the problem with the characters we all know and love is that they're owned by Disney now, but they were created by some of the greatest creators of all time. You know, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Roy Thomas, and the list goes on and on and on. But the problem with that is that Marvel or Disney pays those guys now in royalties, and they're doing it out of good faith. Or are they doing it out of...
Are they doing that of what, John? You died there for a minute. What happened?
Oh, did I? I died?
Yeah, you just said, or are they doing that of, and you stopped. Why?
I don't know what just happened.
Are they doing this out of good faith, or what's
the
other?
Are they doing this out of good faith? I mean, they're doing it because it's the right thing to do, good faith, or are they doing it because it's good publicity? And I tend to choose the latter. But the truth is, Marvel or Disney doesn't want to pay these guys. They don't, and that's just the truth. And so what they're trying to do is phase out those characters, and hence the sales haven't been well. But people always ask me, well, why do they do that? They're doing this for the stories. Yeah, they don't want to pay these guys. But pause. People don't realize, what is it, Mitch? Marketing. They're still going to make money no matter what to change things up.
Well, John, I just don't believe that, because as we were talking before this conversation, I was recalling the books that I grew up with, and then you said, wait a minute, you simpleton. Are you telling me you didn't realize there was the factors behind the changes that happened in the 80s? I go, what do you mean? You go,
yeah, okay.
The Secret Wars. I go, yeah, they were just trying to reinvigorate the line because they knew they were getting a new generation of readers, and you said, wrong. The real reason behind Spider-Man's black suit, the Gray Hulk, the new Thor.
If anybody remembers in the late 80s, or the mid-80s, the late 80s, you know, you had Steve Rogers as the captain, you had the Gray Hulk, the Mr. Fix-It Hulk, you had Thor in the armor, you have the Silver Centurion, Iron Man, and the silver armor and stuff. The reason why they did that wasn't just because of creative direction. No, they did that because the copyrights were getting over on those characters, and all those creators who wanted a piece of what they created were coming out of the woodwork, such as Joe Simon wanting Captain America. So they have, that's their, what's it called, the contingency plan?
Yeah, it's the like backup.
Yeah, their backup plan in case they lost those characters. That's why they did it. People thought that, oh, they're just changing these things. No. Copyright. People don't know what goes on the other side of the, behind the curtain, behind the Wizard of Oz. What is it? Behind, when you found out that it wasn't really this thing, it was just this guy controlling these, you know, he was on this controller, and it wasn't what you thought it was. But that's the real, cold, hard cash.
Well, but you know what? I don't believe you, John. I don't. I honestly believe that those stories were generated out of creativity of the writers and the artists at the time who were trying to tell a story and entertain and just capture the imagination of fans like myself. I remember running out to the car with the new issue of Secret Wars, and I just had to see what happened next because I wanted to see the story. I wanted to see what happened to Spider-Man. I wanted to see what happened to the Thing after Wolverine scratched his face open. I refuse to believe your theory that this was all done because they were trying to protect copyrights. Yes, there was a toy line. Yes, they were trying to promote toys. I understand that part of it. But no, I think it was about storytelling.
Yeah, the only story who's been telling you that was a false god, Mitch, because Spider-Man with the black costume, now, remember, Secret Wars was kind of built on the precedence, exactly what you said. It was to sell toys and stuff. People don't understand those changes. Every time people ask me, well, how come they don't just keep Spider-Man the way that he is? And how come they have to change it up, or they change up this guy? They do it to sell toys. People look at just the comic book stories, and the comic books are the lowest part of the whole denominator on the pyramid. Nobody, they don't care about the comics, because the comics sell less than everything else. It's about posters, toys, video games. If you can change up Spider-Man a little every year, that means there's another million, 2 million, 3 million units that are going to sell. We talked about this earlier. Why is Batman the most mass-marketed figure in the whole world? Because it was Batman that started all this. Because Batman, you could make Batman a mountain climber, a skier. You could always change up his figure and always throw him, put him a bazooka on his back, give him bat wings, whatever. And you could always change him up. And so you know, one kid doesn't have this Batman, he can have this Batman. He can have this Batman. You could do the same with Robin. That's why Superman didn't sell as much. Then eventually you have the red and blue Superman. Oh, we can sell a bunch of blue Superman. We can sell a bunch of red Superman. That's double the profits at the end of the year. That's why your heroes always change up. That's why you always need a new version of the hero. Give him new gadgets. Give him new everything.
No. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say I agree with you maybe on the Hasbro toys Hasbro who did the Batman line, and they said, you know, why don't we put them in, stop, because I used to get those toys. I used to pick them up and go, isn't this clever? He's in a bright blue suit because that's his Arctic suit. He's in a red suit because that's his firefighting Batman suit. I'm like, that's kind of clever. And it was cool. But then you realize they weren't stopping. When they came across the 100th Batman figure, you knew something was going on, because there was a camouflage Batman, there was a snow Batman, there was a beach party Batman. Every other day there was another Batman. It was getting crazy, and it was hard to actually find just a simple gray-suited Batman that looked like the character on the TV show or the comic book, because they had all these variations of it. But what about in the 60s? What about in the 70s? All those books, they didn't have different uniforms. Cap wore the same outfit. The Hulk wore purple pants. Spider-Man had the same John Romita outfit that he had wore in the 60s and based on the Steve Ditko one. This was not the case. They didn't have big motion pictures coming out every other week that were making $1 billion. They were lucky if they had a TV show on CBS, and it sucked. I don't believe this. When did this happen, John? I think you were just making this up. And you're trying to state your case because you, my friend, have become cynical and lost the wide-eyed innocence of the comic book fan.
When did it start? Okay, look, it started January 12, 1966, when the Batman Adam West feature came out. Superheroes were finally something that could, like, moms, kids, everybody wanted Batman, because once you had the mom and pop stone about Batman, everybody wanted it. But so you're saying how come it's happening now, or when did it happen?
Well, I think you're just more aware of it now because of the media and because of the internet.
You just answered the question. There's internet. Kids know what's online. Kids are more aware of stuff. Back then, come on, Mitch. When we were kids, when we walked into the toy aisle, that's when we knew what was new. Or you walked at your friend's house and they had a toy you never saw before, or maybe you happened to catch a commercial. It's different. You know, I mean, today, it's so mass-produced, so you have to have a new figure, like, every few months. I mean, how many Harley Quinn figures out there with a big mallet, a small mallet,
They had G.I. Joe, not the 3 3/4 inch, but the bigger versions that I grew up with. You had a red hair G.I. Joe, you had a black hair, you had a blonde hair, you had different adventures.
It was a little different with G.I. Joe because those were different people, though. You know, they were all different people. The thing with Batman, everybody wanted Batman, so they're like, okay, we can put this Batman figure out there. But now, okay, they're buying up that figure, so now we're going to put out a Batman like this, and a Batman that looks like this, and a Batman that looks like this, because you got to remember.
But that's just Batman, though. That's just, I mean, Superman's costume did not change.
But when mom doesn't know it like the kid. So when mom walks into the toy aisle and she's going to buy a toy for her kid, she's going to look at the regular suit Batman and she'll be like, oh, my son already has that one. This one looks like Migos matches Malone. I want this one. Oh, this one's a little different. He doesn't have this one.
I am wearing a Yankees t-shirt I bought the other night at the New York Yankees. I went to the game. I went to the gift shop. They had a whole section of superhero Yankee shirts. They had Spider-Man on a Yankee shirt, a Captain America, Iron Man, all the different ones. They had Star Wars Yankee shirts. I bought the Captain America one. I'm wearing it right now. He is in the classic Captain America suit. In fact, the artwork, if I look at it, I think it's drawn by Sal Buscema. Why? Why did they not go with the new Captain America look, the Hydra cap? They went with the classic look, and that's what I'm trying to tell you. You're wrong, because there still is a world where Spider-Man looks just like he did in the 60s, Cap looks like he did in the 40s. Everything's not changed.
Mitch, I'll answer that question, and it's pretty easy to answer. First off, you look at it this way. Sure, the iconic characters will always be iconic. Now, the average person that collects, like, that goes to Yankee games and all that, like those are the jocks or people that follow sports. They're not following comic books. They may hear the rhetoric, or they might remember Spider-Man or Captain America or Iron Man when they were a kid and all that, but they haven't seen him in 20, 30 years. They're not looking for the people like us who have been following them every minute of their life. They're looking for those average people that go to games and like, oh yeah, I remember Spider-Man and I love the Yankees and that looks cool. They'll take it from there. And plus, you got to look at it this way too, Mitch. When the movies are big advertisements. No matter what anybody wants to say or how good the story is, they have to write the story that compels people. But it's a big advertisement to buy Spider-Man, and the first actual movies have to be those iconic characters. But then you're going to notice things start changing up. Like, case in point, even Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movie coming out. He's got all these little gadgets. They got to explain this stuff. And why is he different? Why doesn't he look just like the Johnny Romita one? Because they got to change it up. They'll sell more figures. You got to think about it. These companies, these corporations are on a year-by-year basis. They don't care what happened in 2010. All they care about is profits. Is it more than the year before? We got to make more profits. So to make more profits, you always have to do new product. And so the characters always have to evolve. And they only evolve because they want to make more money.
Okay. Well, what about all the stories where Iron Man had to get a different suit, a deep sea suit, a deep space suit, a stealth suit? You're not telling me that those armors weren't created because the story called for it, and I'm telling you...
Well, Mitch, of course they call for it because Iron Man does that kind of stuff, but I don't know if you remember when the Iron Man animated series was out in the early 90s, they made a crap load of Iron Man figures, and they made every single type of Iron Man, and it was perfect. They had the spacesuit Iron Man, they had the regular Iron Man, whatever, and all this, but if you look back in the 60s, Iron Man didn't really have that, and when they were advertising at Iron Man, he was just wearing that suit of armor, because once again, when you have on a cartoon, when you have Iron Man wearing all this different stuff, it's going to, you have the ability to make more product, and more product and more kids that are into it, you can sell more. Mitch, we both know this. More is better. I've been a dealer all my life, and I can tell you one thing. If you're a dealer and you have a little bit of product on your table, 90% of the people are going to walk right by you. But if you have a whole bunch of product on your table, even if it's all horrible, they're more likely to stop and look to see what you have. Am I correct?
Yeah. I understand. That's why I have such a diverse group of people at every year's Terrific Con. If I had this one particular guest, no one would show up. But I have to get the guy that wrote this comic.
Here's something that you did. Your postcard flyers are out, and you have two different versions.
I do. I have actually several versions depending on
you. You do it too, because I know why you do it. Can I throw this out there?
Sure.
Two reasons why you do it. One sees one looks more flashy than the other one. They'll go for that, but also people collect these things too. You realize people like this stuff. That's why you hire a beautiful artist and Mike Giarrusso, Chris Giarrusso, and then Jerry Ordway and all that, but you make it look flashy and stuff. So they want it for two reasons. They want to pick it up, they want to collect it, maybe they get a few more, because more is always better than one.
I understand that, but I'm trying to tell you that when you go and attack these stories that we cherish and know and love, and I believe they're only created out of pure storytelling elements, there's no unscrupulous methods behind it, there's no alternative motives behind such as like the Kree Skull War, the Green Goblin Death of Gwen Stacy, the Captain America...
There was a heart and soul to it. And I'm not saying there isn't today, but look, how come creators like Ed Brubaker, he was one of the best Captain America writers of all time. How come he jumped ship? How come all people jumped from those corporations like Marvel and Disney, Marvel and DC, and they go to these independent stuff? Because all of a sudden, they can't write the stories that they want.
No, well, there's another school of thought of that is because these guys understand if you come up with a brand new character and you give it to Marvel, if you're working for them, or DC, that character is going to become part of the corporation and they're going to own that.
But it still doesn't mean they don't have Marvel doesn't have a cast of characters that you can always use. And plus, everything is geared to its universe. Case in point being, you're not going to see many you're not going to see, like the Juggernaut has to be in an X-Men comic, and he's got to be a recurring villain on that because he's part of that world. So when they sell that product, you know, he's one of
Okay. It's not all about toy sales, because toy sales for action figures have dropped over the last 10 years.
Yeah, they have dropped, but it isn't just toy figures. I mean, you know why they dropped? Because figures, now you go to a comic book store, they're $30 for a little plastic figure. It's ridiculous. It's all ridiculous. But it's not just figures. It's also, what's bigger, video games. It's also video games. If you make a Spider-Man, and then all of a sudden it's got more downloads, more stuff, more things you can do, the kids are more inclined to buy it. Listen, man, I love Spider-Man and I love these heroes more than anything. And more than anything, I would love them to just go back to what they did. Because I'll tell you this, back in the 70s, a lot of creators wanted to kind of change up, like, you know, like, let's just say Iron Man or Thor back in the 70s. Now, I heard this straight from Mr. Thomas's mouth. Stan Lee used to tell them the illusion of change. That was the big word. Give it the illusion of change. You don't really change up the character, but you make it seem like a change, but everything kind of goes back to normal. Why did he say that? Because of marketing. You always wanted to keep Thor and them the way they were. Now, back then, that worked. That formula doesn't really work today because, once again, there's more awareness. There's more licensing out there. It's so much more than it was back in the 70s. And that's just the truth.
Well, I just saw an article the other day. It was in Forbes magazine, and it said that Star Wars, its worst enemy, and even now you could apply this to Marvel, is its own success. Because once you become a billion-dollar franchise, and the money's coming in, why would you do anything to rock that boat, to sink it? You wouldn't. You're going to play it safe. You're going to keep bringing that stuff out there. That's just the way it is. That's with selling soap. That's with selling orange juice. That's with selling cereal. Why do you think they haven't changed Life cereal in years? What? Remember when they changed Coca-Cola and everybody flipped out of the new Coke and they had to bring back the old classic Coke? Remember that? There was two Cokes out there. People don't like change, John. So because of that, I'm trying to tell you, you're wrong, because they always go back to the original, no matter what, because people don't like change.
Mitch, you're absolutely correct. But the thing is, once something starts making money, the Hollywood moguls, those big money moguls, they get crazy and they want to make more. So then there's more cooks in the kitchen, they say. And then they're going to throw more stuff. Case in point, let's look at Rambo. Rambo is a perfect indication of what you're talking about. Okay, you get First Blood, which was a fantastic movie, and that made a lot of money. So then you had Rambo, which even made more money. And then what happened? It got so Hollywood down that there was more money, more bigger budget, more cooks, and they got worse. They get crazy because they start. It always happens, and it's almost like a towel full of water. And then when you squeeze that towel, you're squeezing it and squeezing it and squeezing it to get that last drop. And that's what happens. These Hollywood people, they always try to F with the original formula, and the key is to keep it as original as the first, because that's always the best. But that's not how it works, because they always think of more. When money gets involved, when corporate gets involved, it always goes sour.
Okay, let's go back. Years ago, you were in a band, a rock band, correct?
Correct.
Would you not have sold your soul, or many people that know you think you already have, if you had one to begin with, not have sold anything or done anything if a record producer came up to you and said, I will make you guys have a number one hit, you'll tour the country, you'll get the mansion, you'll get the yacht, you'll get the nice car? Who in their right mind would not accept a guaranteed paycheck?
You see, that's exactly true, because when I was in the band, too, for the first few years, I mean, Jesus, 5 years, you're struggling, and you're doing anything to make money. You know, we're selling albums, but the thing is, everybody says they have integrity, and believe me, even myself, everybody says they got this, but they never see the other side of the fence, because, let's be honest, you got these creators that are dishing out this work, or they're doing this, but all of a sudden this big check gets thrown in front of their face, and we can say now, like, oh, I wouldn't do it, but We've never, 99.9% of us have never been in that position. But if that big check comes in from that corporation saying, they'll be like, hey, you take this amount of money, and then you're just going to change it up like this, and all of a sudden you're going to, you know, we're not going to be hardcore anymore, we're going to sound like Justin Bieber. You know, that's a very, very tempting offer, and it's hard to say that, we can say we probably wouldn't do it, but it's hard to say if we're in that moment, because why do so many people do it? Because money does talk, but
there is a place in this world for integrity. Not everybody sells out,
and I wish and I hope that most and there are a lot of people that have integrity out there, but it is a difficult situation to change things up. Hey, case in point, Lucas sold Star Wars to Disney. Whoever was owning Marvel at the time, I have no idea. Was it Perlmutter? Whatever. He sold to Disney. I mean, people are going to sell this stuff. Look at Beanie Babies. That guy sold the tie. You know, like, I mean, when they're going to give you a big fat check that's going to state you for the rest of your life, who cares what the hell they do with it?
Let me tell you, not everybody in this world is as cynical as you make them believe or would like to believe. I myself am my own businessman. I do not have any money. I do not have any supporters. I do not have any backers. I'm not chasing a paycheck. I'm not kissing anybody's goddamn ass to do the show that I do year after year. That Terrificon is 100% paid by my bank account. The money that my wife and I put into this show is the only people, and we're the only decision makers there. But I listen to all the fans. I ask what they want to see, who they want to see, what type of program they want, what type of events, what type of panels. It is actually created by a uniform or a unibody, a unimind, like they had in the comics there. Everybody contributes to the show. Everybody contributes to the show, but the underlying fact is it's the love of the comic books. That's why I get the guests I do. I have not sold out. I have not gone down that road and become a celebrity pop fest. I'm not, and I will not. So there. That proves you wrong. What?
First off, you're a fan, and I understand. And I know you personally. I've known you for 10 years, and I love you to death. And I know exactly where you're coming from. And that's why I work with you, and that's why I do this stuff with you. But, case in point, Mitch. If you weren't making a dime show after show after show after show after show, like let's just say you weren't making anything and doing all this, with all this pressure, all the frustration, and it's hard on your family and everything because you're always on the go. It's a tough.
We're talking about comic books at 7 a.m. Yes, that's a point.
Right. But what I'm saying is, if you weren't making any money year after year after year, would you continue doing it?
I'd be a fool, I'd be divorced, I'd be on the street. My wife, who would put up with somebody that would keep wasting their time?
The bottom line is, you're still doing it because you do make money, though. Correct?
That's the point of survival. I do something every day to make sure that there's a roof over my head.
Right,
but exactly. I have not sold out. I have not said, oh.
No, you haven't. No. But you are successful, and you know what works. And you do capitalize on the things that make you successful, and you make them better. But, Mitch, honestly, you have a rational mind. You see that. Right, I get that. But what if an investor came in, like that backed you or something, and said, we're going to give you $150 million to bring this guy in, and they're paying for it and everything. And it goes, you know, hey, I don't bring those type of guys in, but that guy would come in.
You know what? I'd say no. And you know why?
No, that's a lie! That's not true.
No. You know why? Because if you do know me, and you can ask my wife who's known me for 30 years, we just celebrated our 24th wedding anniversary, I am the most thick-headed son of a bitch there ever is. And if you ever think that I'm doing something and you don't like it and you want to try to change my mind, be prepared for a fight, because I will dig in like a fat tick on a fat dog and suck every blood out, dig my heels into the ground until they take root. I will not back down, buddy. You know why? Because I grew up reading comic books. I grew up reading Superman, Captain America, and all those people who told me and instilled me with a moral ethical code that said fight for what's right and never sell out. So there, no matter what you tell me, Mr. Cimino, I am trying to tell you that there is a place in this world for truth, justice, and the American way, and you are goddamn wrong.
Well, I'm going to say that is not true because, I mean, oh, no, but everything you say obviously is true, but I'm just saying, like, if an investor came in and said, I'm going to give you this celebrity, and we're going to take care of it and all that stuff, even if it doesn't fit with the theme of your convention, would you still bring them in? And it'll be like, would you still bring them in?
No, I've turned down people that want to display at the show because I'm not you know, privy to that or a part of that or condone that type of stuff. So no, they have not been exhibiting at my show. You're not going to go into certain conventions that have recently been in the papers because they had people selling sex toys on public display when there's little children walking around.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. I'm not a prude, but I do have people. It says right on the contract, and if you don't like the contract, you can hit the high road. It says everything must be a PG-13 type of level because we're a family-oriented show. And I've had two kids grow up in my house here, and I do not like to be exposed. There's too much out there in the world with the internet and all that stuff out there enough for being a parent. I don't need to go for a couple hours to what I think is a safe comic book convention where my kids can enjoy the innocence of Spider-Man, Batman, the Hulk, and all that stuff, and have to cover their eyes because they turn a corner and they're seeing some type of sadomasochistic artwork on display.
Oh, yeah.
That's not going to happen. No. So there, I do not sell out. So if somebody came up to me and said, I will give you $100 million to take your show, but you're going to lose the control and we're going to put whatever vendors we want in there, that's just the way it is. I'm like, take your $100 million and shove it up your ass because I'm not going to let that happen.
That's different, Mitch. I'm not. You're going way on the other side. I totally agree.
I'm going off the reservation. You're telling me I'm going. Look at you. You're the one that's the most hot-headed lunatic that I know. You'll sit there and scream to the four winds if you could about something when you're onto a topic. That's why we're recording this now, because you said get the microphone and put it on because you're on fire.
Right. But Mitch, once again, obviously there's a model now for conventions that, like, if we're going to talk conventions, that it's just, you can see it. It's going to implode. It's not going to work.
Well, case in point, did you not just tell me about a convention that happened this weekend, and we're not going to say any names, that had 45 people show up over 2 days?
They lost like 100. Yeah, I heard some of the numbers, and it just was like, they lost like,
and
I
why?
Like 100.
Because it was a cash grab. They thought they could put a show out, put a name on it, and they'd have, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 people show up.
Well, Mitch, what's case in point? Why do me and you work? On paper, me and you should never work. We should be both in a... We lock us both in a room a half hour later, we're both dead on the floor with knives sticking out of us, and we're both dead. But we work. Why do we work? Because we do have the same values. We do come from that innocence of the comics. When we opened up those comics, they defined our lives. They gave us the ability to dream, and we you know, they became part of our soul. And so you always have that, you know, Captain America thing about you. I got that Hulk thing about me, you know, but that honorable, that superhero quality that, you know, I love this and I'm doing it because I love it. And we're successful at what we do is because we love what we do. We have the passion for what we do. And so there aren't many like you, because you got to think, let's look at the headquarters of Disney, of Warner Brothers, of all those major corporations. Do you think they really care what's going to happen to Spider-Man next month? Do you think they really care what's happening? As long as Superman sells and that name brand is out there, because those comics are all advertisements, that's what they care about. We care what those heroes do. No, they don't care about that. And that's the truth. And that's how you run your Comic-Con. Keith Gleason, our buddy there from Reckless Sidekick Productions, Plastic City Comic-Con, he's a very lower-level Terrific-Con. He comes from that. When we went into those Howard Johnsons and we saw a creator there, especially you were even there before me, seeing, you saw Wally Wood, for crying out loud.
I did, yeah.
But like, yeah, but like, and you remember the smells and just that just the innocence of it. That was what the best. Now it's like, you know, golden, like a yellow brick road. Everything is beautiful, you know, big this and big money this. Yeah, it's not innocent anymore. And we look at it through innocent eyes.
Well,
would you say virgin eyes?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've never had sex with my eyeballs. But let me tell you, I can say this without a fact. I took my kids to the Yankee game the other day, and we sat in the beautiful seats behind third base, and, you know, it was very nice. And, you know, they had food services. You get to eat what you want. The players were literally 5 feet in front of me. Beautiful seats. And I agree. They were corporate box seats, okay? But little Mitchie remembers going to Quigley Stadium in West Haven, Connecticut, where I grew up, and they used to have the West Haven Yankees, which was a farm team of the New York Yankees, and all the players that were coming up would come down here, and you'd see, you know, future major leaguers. I think it was $1 to get into the park. It was this old park built in the 40s. We'd sit wherever we wanted. There was no assigned seating. You sat in the bleachers. You had your, literally, Cracker Jacks. You had a bottle of orange soda. And the whole day must have cost you maybe like $3, maybe, if that was it, between the soda and the candy and the ball game. And you had fun. And I sat there and said, now the same experience has got to be costing about $300 or $400 a ticket. And that's insane, because the ball game has not changed. The way the ball is thrown, the way the bats, you know, three outs, three strikes, you're out, all that's the same. But the world around it has changed. And I'm trying to tell you, I believe, that's why I go every Wednesday to pick up my comics at Cave Comics in Newtown, Connecticut, that there is a world, there is a place for those characters, and they're still out there somewhere, and you just have to turn the pages, and maybe you'll find that innocence, great storytelling, without sitting there and being cynical like you are, and think every single page is done as a calculated experiment to see how much profit they can make. And I also have to point out that you, sir, have given up reading comic books since the year 2003. So you have no idea what's going on in the real world.
And and Richie, who hasn't given up, he has these stacks and stacks of comics that he buys every week. And he hasn't even read them, but he does it because he loves that crisp red, white, and blue logo that says Captain America. And he's just hoping that everything that goes... See, unfortunately, America is built... It's a democracy, you know, and you vote with a dollar bill. The reason why I left in 2003 is because I was... My innocence was taken away. I hate to say it, but, I was raped by the comics. And I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. My heroes have changed. They're not what I remember. And I let it go. You are the abused dog. I'll still love you no matter how much you beat me, how much you hurt me. I'm still going to be there next Wednesday, and I'm going to give you my money because I still love you.
I still say my Steve Englehart's, my Roy Thomas's, my J.M. DeMattia's, my Peter David's, they might have been replaced by new folks like Colleen Bunn, Aaron, I can't think of his name right now off the top of my head, Robbie Thompson. I'm looking at some of the names of my books that I bought this week. I got, right here. Charles Sewell, great writer, right there. Chip Zdarsky, okay? Neil Spencer, right? Nick Spencer, I'm sorry, who's writing that new Captain America line. You're going to tell these guys that they're not doing the best job? You're going to go up to them and say, hey, you're not doing a good storytelling. You're not writing good comics. Would you do that, John? Would you go up to Jerry Dugan, who just finished a run on Deadpool, and now he's writing Guardians of the Galaxy, and say...
Of course not. And I'm sure those guys...
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah, no, I'm asking.
Why not? I don't, why wouldn't I go up to them?
Because no, why would you tell them that... If you believe that they're a sellout, go tell them they're a sellout.
I never said that they're sellouts. They're doing a good job, but I'm just saying the whole formula of decompression and writing is not the same as it was back then. They have, because they have to
they're making a living.
Their stories have to gear to the movies and everything. So basically, this is how it is. They have to connect the dots. It's like basically the dots are here. It's like this character's got to do this to this to this, and it has to be in that, and it has to be this many stories and stuff, and this many issues and stuff. Why? Because, and then write it the way that you want to write it. But it has to be on that. It has to be through that path. Why? Because they have to sell the trades. They got to do this. It's got to be the marketing. It's got to do all that. That's why so many of the artists and the writers have left, is because they're so constrained. They go to the independents so they can write the stories they want to. So you're misconstruing me, Mitchie. I never said they sold out. Hey, man, if I had an opportunity to write for Captain America, I would love to do it. Give me a chance. But if you're going to tell me how to write it, that's going to kind of suck, because I'm not going to really tell my story. Now, I'll do it because I love Captain America, but is it really my story? No, that's why they go to the independent.
Are you going to tell me
that? I see that they're sellouts for doing it? Absolutely not. They're so talented, they're fantastic writers and stuff, but do they reach their potential doing it the way they do it? I don't know. I don't think so.
Are you going to tell me that you don't believe that Martin Goodman didn't tell Stan Lee how to write those stories? You're going to tell me
not at the beginning.
Mort Weisinger didn't tell Julie Schwartz and all those other fellows did not how the books, how they were supposed to be. They've always had to answer to a higher authority, be it an editor or a publisher. So
absolutely.
So, but and where was that money coming from?
No, like, absolutely. But do you think the restraints are they on today? You got to remember that they were the restraints today is there's so much more money involved.
Well, not only that, I do believe that we live in a different climate too, when it's politically correctly charged. So if you say the wrong thing, you draw the wrong picture. Case in point, Marvel just had an artist who just did I can't even remember what exactly he wrote, but it was very controversial. He drew something in the background that was pro ISIS or Islam. I don't even know what the thing was. It was very.
Oh, what the one in that? Was that the one in the X-Men one?
Yeah, X-Men number one. Yeah, yeah. And he got fired the next day once it came out because somebody read it and they said, this is what this passage means when you interpret the Bible in this particular country. And again, I can't remember all the specifics.
Did you see that issue, Mitch?
I have that issue. I bought that issue. Issue one.
I saw it too, and I saw the thing. You know, I saw what they're inclined. But he's fired, though. Didn't he get fired?
Oh, he got fired immediately. Yeah, it was like the next day he's out of a job. But the thing of it is, I mean, I'm not saying what he did was right. I'm just saying, how does that happen? I mean, there are things in the past that I think somebody wrote the word shit in a comic book back in the 80s.
There was a lot of mistakes.
If you freeze frame
there was that Wolverine one. Remember the Wolverine one when he said... I think you meant to say kill.
Yeah. No, I know. And there's some things in there, but some whether they happened by accident or they were done intentionally, there's always been some stuff too. So you can't sit there.
Here's one, Mitch. Remember when Al Milgrom left and he wrote on the side of like Harris. He said something about Bob Harris on the side. He kind of insulted him. He had it like on the side of a book. Do you remember that one?
I don't know the particulars of that.
You can look that one up. Al Milgrom, when he was left, I think he got in trouble about it.
I'm just trying to say, you brought up that they all work for these big corporations and they have to answer to them, and that's why some of these guys lose their jobs and get punished and stuff like that. But even with the big corporations watching everything they do, they're still allowing these guys to create. They're still allowing these guys to write and draw with the stories they want to draw. I mean, case in point, I just told you, if they dictated to what these guys had to draw and write, that would have never gone through and that never would have been printed. And the guy kind of not really got fired. But they give these guys freedom to write the stories and tell the stories they want to. It's not all driven by the man.
Of course it is. But it's the ones that matter that there is. The ones that, of course they are. But if you go to like the comics that Joe Carmagna writes and stuff, the ones that are for kids are the ones that are a lot less down the line. I'm sure there's a lot more freedom on those. And there's a lot more restraints. Obviously there's continuity restraints and all that stuff. But now it's a different entity. Disney owns this stuff. No comic or nothing is going to be printed out there, is going to go out there that doesn't have a million eyes on it and making sure that it's a certain way and has a certain voice.
And here's
they're creators. Wait a second. You're saying that they're creators and they're creating what they want. No. They're using the toys of the character, toys that they love, but are they creating it the way that they want to? I'm not 100% sure with that. Maybe a few, but not many. And how much freedom? Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's that much.
Well, all right, to your point.
Really quickly, case in point, how come so many leave? How come?
I don't know, John. You'll have to ask the individuals on that situation.
How come? They have all this freedom, you're saying, and they're doing everything so good. How come they leave? Everybody would want Ed Brubaker back on Captain America. I know you would.
Why? I'd have to ask Mr. Brubaker.
Now he's writing movies and all that stuff. You got to understand too. A lot of these creators are so much more respected now. Come on, let's go back in the day with Roy Thomas and Stan Lee and all them. Those creators weren't as respected. Today, you got like Christos Gage writing for Daredevil. A lot of those guys are going Hollywood now because the comics are so much more respected.
They're so much respected because the stories that they're writing are quality and they make great movies and they appeal to the mass public because the stories are good because they're written and drawn by talented people.
Absolutely.
So, but that goes full circle to what you were trying to say, how there's being dictated. Christos Gage writes a great Daredevil Netflix miniseries. Everybody responds to it. They all love it. Christos Gage leaves Massachusetts. He moves to California, and now he's working on a movie or a TV show. But he's there because of his creativity and his talent, which wasn't suppressed.
Well, Mitch, hold on. You're making it like I'm saying, this is where you're wrong. You're making it sound like I'm saying that they're not talented. These guys are the best writers in the world. That's why they're doing that.
But your point was that they're not allowed to tell the stories because they're being told by this corporate entity.
Yes, there is a certain way that they have to say that they have to tell that story. But they're so good that those stories are still compelling and all that because that's what they do. They're not working here because they suck at it. But let's just say something. If they have a problem with that and all that stuff, they don't have a problem with telling them goodbye because all of them are expendable. And that's the truth because it started with Jack Kirby way back then. And that's a big saying in the industry. If they can do it to Jack Kirby, they can do it to you.
No, you know what it is? It was about Jack Kennedy, the president. If they can kill the president, they can kill anybody. Now you're misconstruing two guys who have the same initials, okay? What I'm trying to tell you is, and what started this whole thing, it's the characters that people are drawn to. No matter what they look like, no matter what costume they're wearing, no matter what toys out there, what movie, whatever, or who's writing or drawing it, it's the essence of the character that comes through, and that's what makes people pick up Superman, Batman for 80 years and all the rest of it. So there.
Correct.
So are we in agreement on that?
Of course we are. Hey, but look why DC's doing so much better than Marvel now. I mean, the people are finally
But they weren't doing it in the movies until Wonder Woman.
Of course, no, but I'm talking about the comics.
You know why Wonder Woman's a hit? They made it a Marvel movie.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why.
They made it a Marvel movie, I could tell you which scenes they stole from Captain America and put a Wonder Woman in it.
No, I agree. I believe me, I know what you're going to say. I saw some of those. I agree. Yeah, but once again, they have to go into a formula that works. If you look at the comic books, too, Marvel, at the beginning, Marvel went so against the grain of what DC was doing in the 50s that they started becoming radicalized. You know, they were so big, but then...
Radicalized?
And that they became popular. They became like, not radicalized, that was the wrong word, but I mean, they became so popular that they became part of pop culture. But then eventually, DC started doing what Marvel was doing, right?
You know why? Because they got the Marvel writers to go work over there.
Well, yeah, I know. Roy was one of them.
They got Roy Thomas, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway. They all went to go work at DC. That's why the stories changed. They became better because they were the same guys that were writing the great stories at Marvel. They were just working over at DC now. That's all.
But you got to go into what works. And if you look at those comics from like the late 70s to like the 80s and stuff, they looked a lot. They were very cohesive. Like they had like the same splashes and all that stuff. Yeah. But Marvel kind of set the imprint on that.
Well, we'll have to, you could go back. I mean, now I'm thinking about it. Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, all these people that wrote fantastic Marvel stories also wrote fantastic DC stories because in this case, it was the talent of the individual and regardless what character he was writing. Yeah, Why can't Roy Thomas come out today and make a great story in modern day? Why, sir?
Why wouldn't he? I should want to know why. The reason why they'll never hire Roy Thomas is because Roy Thomas will write a Roy Thomas comic book, and that's probably not what they want right now. Think about it. Let's be honest. If Roy Thomas, he can't have restraints. He's got to do it his way. It's kind of hard. I would love for him to, and I would love to see, I bet you the industry could change a bit. Maybe it could go back to the olden days when they had a little more freedom. If Roy Thomas wrote, that's my opinion.
Yeah, the movies they're making are based on his stories and other people like Engelhart's and the rest of them.
Mitch, that's the ironic thing about the whole thing. This is where we're going to come into agreement. They are based on the old stuff. I know, that's the funniest thing.
And that's why we like the movies, because we remember those stories growing up. And I go, oh, that's the story. If they did the next Spider-Man movie based on Kraven's Last Hunt, it would be fantastic because that was one of the best Spider-Man stories ever.
Well, of course, but believe me, if If they write the code, they don't have to they don't have to mess with the original stuff. If they made the movies exactly like the comic, now I understand they got to tweak things here and there. It would be so much better. But there's so many hands in those kitchens that don't see it the way we do. I don't believe me. I agree with you. You have a character like Superman that's been around for a million years. How can you mess with that formula because it's been working for a million years? If they're strong enough to last, they're strong enough they're going to last anywhere. But that's the other thing, too. Despite how bad some of those movies are, or, like, let's even say, like, the Fantastic Four, like, regardless what they're doing to them now, how they are currently, they're always strong enough to rebound and come back. That's the strength of these characters. So, no matter, I mean, think about it. Superman's not cool right now. Out of all, can you believe it? Superman is probably the uncoolest of all. Wonder Woman is the hippest character right now for DC. She's the number one.
Batman will always be the coolest they have.
No. But Batman's still always good, too. But what I'm saying is, it's kind of unfortunate that Superman, who's their flagship character, is kind of like a B character right now because they haven't done him well. But what I'm saying is, in a few years, somebody's going to do Superman well, whether he's in the movies or anything, and he's going to come back. They always come back, because look at the 90s when the X-Men were huge. Spider-Man was so unhip. Remember Howard Mackey was writing Spider-Man?
Yep.
Spider-Man, I remember I was working at a comic book store. That's Entertainment in Worcester. And I remember, like, I can't believe Spider-Man sucks. Like, Spider-Man, how can Spider-Man suck? It's like, and for years, Spider-Man sucked.
Oh, I know. I had the same with the Fantastic Four. I would get that book every month hoping it would be... And I even thought about dropping it a couple times, but I couldn't because the OCD in me wouldn't let me because I'd be buying every issue. And I said, eventually it's going to get good. And that's why I go every Wednesday back to where we started and pick up every book.
Yes. But Spider-Man's back into prominence. But what I'm saying is these characters are strong enough to stand the test of time. So they'll have their ups and their downs, their lows and their lowest of lows and the highest of highs. And there'll always be a little Mitchie there to collect.
And there'll always be another Johnny who tells me sucker.
What's funny, Mitch? Me telling you're a sucker, but so many times you're calling me up and you're like, I can't believe I still get these things. Like, down on yourself.
Well, because I go every week and they do tend to pile up in the next room, and my wife goes, what is this, a hoarder? I go, I don't know why I'm buying some of these books. And then I start buying older books and omnibuses because those are the books I grew up with, and I do like those because they were good stories. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do that. My library is actually pretty big, and I got the. You're the one that got me to get the shield.
The shield one.
I was looking at my stuff, and I'm like, I can't believe I don't have that with all that Steranko and all that great stuff.
Yeah. I'm digging through back issue bins all the time. Me and Ordway go out, and we go to a certain comic shop around here, and we just start digging through back issue bins and finding books that are torn covers and whatever, and, you know, not the
and
best.
Mitch, let me just throw this out. What you just said there was awesome, because how my store, my Saturday Morning Collectibles, my superhero pit stop, I like to call it, is, you saw it, it's a lot of random stuff. They're boxes, right? So you have to dig through it. And I always tell people to dig for the love. There's something about digging through a box of comics that's fun. Like, oh, let me see this. And you and Jerry are doing that same thing. A lot of people today don't have that. They don't know what that's all about. They want it, so these are all your Superman. I'm like, you gotta dig for it. Maybe it's in there. And this, I have it set up that way because when we were young and you go to those comic book stores or that newsstand that had that stack of the older issues, you dug through them and hopefully you went like, oh, Jesus, here's this, here's that. And every time I have people dig, they always get a stack because they're looking for one comic, they're getting a stack, and they don't even know they're doing what I want them to do, and it's dig for the love. And I always tell them that.
The master manipulator there. Anyway, and that is funny, though, after we left the shop, we're driving back in the car, and Jerry goes, hey, do you want some of my older copies of books that don't have covers on them? The stories are still good. And I'm like, yeah, okay, what'd you pick up? And he goes, oh, I got this, but I have two of these. You want one? And here we are, grown men in their 50s, trading comic books in the car ride home like I did when I was like 8 or 9 with my pals when we used to pick up the books at the local shop in New Haven. Hey, do you want this one? No, it's not that good. You can have it. Oh, okay, thanks, man. And that's what I'm telling you. And that's the reason why I go every week.
And see right there, I can agree with you. But you went into the back issue bins to get those comics, correct?
Oh, yes, I did. Okay, but I still buy the new ones, so leave me alone. All right, that's it. We went extra long here today. We're almost at an hour, and that's way too much because even Scott Martin doesn't have enough patience to listen to this.
Yeah. He was a fun one, though, Martin. Mitch, it was a fun.
He's our number one fan.
Who? Which one? Scott? Scott who?
Scott. Oh, Scott Martin. Not no, R.W. Martin. That's a different Martin.
Oh, please. Mitch, come on. Come on, we can't go there.
Can't go there. All right, that wraps it up. Another. I actually have a gavel now. My son brought home a gavel from like a courthouse. I don't know why we have it, but I could end every episode now with a ramble, or smashing of the gavel, but I'm not going to do that. How do we end every episode, John?
And that's that.
And that's that. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC, the folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.